very happy to be talking about this work that I have been doing since last May. When I was here, I came across some very exciting experimental results in cuprates. So I started thinking about it. And I will present some of the results that I have obtained. So the title is Super Radiant Superconductivity. Too many supers, but you know, these things help, at least in publishing papers. So after a brief introduction, I will talk about superradiance, and then review superconductivity theory, and remind about the pseudo-spin formalism, which is well known to most of you. And then I will discuss what I call as Anderson atom, which has been always there in the superconductors. Nobody recognized it the way that we will do now, in K-space. And it turns out that this provides a nice opportunity to check ideas of superradiance in a superconductor. Then I will derive Dickey type of Hamiltonian for this system, and then discuss some wave functions and superradiance property. Then go to recent, very exciting experimental results on femtosecond laser-induced ITC superconductivity. And in one set of experiments, they see transient superconductivity at room temperatures. So that's what makes it very exciting. And then I will try to explain the experimental observation from this particular point of view. So this is what I want to do today. Now, quantum mechanics is at work everywhere, but it's very shy. Often it hides. Most of the time it hides into chemical bond and some, you know, simple things. But sometimes it comes out in a remarkable way, like superconductivity, and then the phenomena of coherent radiation laser, and also super radiance. So the idea is that now, and also if you look at it, the phenomena of laser is a room temperature phenomena. Super radiance, as we will see, is also a room temperature phenomena. But somehow superconductivity is a very low temperature phenomena. Even in the best cuprates, you have to go to very low temperature, like 160 Kelvin. So is there a way to combine them, and is there a way to transfer quantum coherence between these two systems? So this is one of the questions. So this is the this was the experiment that came in 2011, where they took the famous lanthanum copper oxide cuprate, which, as you all know, has this kind of phase diagram. You have a temperature and doping axis, and you have the superconducting dome. Now, in this particular system, when you have barium doping, there is so-called 1/8 stripe order, which actually suppresses superconductivity in this doping range. Like doping is 1/8. So their TC is nearly zero. Then what they do is they take this material and shine femtosecond laser. And the laser frequency is 80 MeV. And it does not excite the electronic system directly, because what they do is they make it resonant with one of the copper oxygen mode, vibration mode. So they basically pump energy into the copper oxygen infrared active mode. And what they find is that the TC, basically from few degree Kelvin, to, it jumps to 20 degree Kelvin for a short time scale of the order of picoseconds. How do they see it? This is called a pump probe method. So you pump it with a laser, and then you probe it with another laser. And then what you find is you find characteristic signals of superconductivity. I will not go into the detail. I will come to it later. So this is one experiment. No, yeah. So
how do they know? Because this is the most natural interpretation.
Right. So one, as Shamagani is pointing out, that you can create particle hole pair excitations, and you can basically photo dope it.
Yeah.
So if you look at the energy scales and the way it behaves as a function of frequency, they can conclude it's not photo doping.
Oh, I see. So because there's a frequency dependence.
Frequency dependence, exactly. So when they tune it to,
which is different from the photo doping frequency.
Exactly. In fact, you are right. In the old olden days, they took pure lanthanum copper oxide, and you can photodope it and make it superconducting. Okay. So you can make a Mott insulator superconducting. Here, it is a very specific frequency which is doing it. So they have ways of concluding it's not photodoping. And then this is an exciting experiment, which was by the same Cavalieri is there, and then there are new authors, where they do the same thing with IPCO. They again excite a copper oxygen mode. When they resonantly excite it, they see transient superconductivity. Here the claim is remarkable. You see transient superconductivity in this region. Now, if you go to the archive, they have withdrawn the paper. Then I met Bernhard Keimer, who is one of the authors. So they are not sure about half of the experiments. In the sense, they are looking at transient superconductivity by two methods. One method is robust, which I will explain later. And the other method, there is some calibration problem. So according to Keimer, whom I met a few weeks ago, this is a very robust result. So the fact is that pseudo gap of cuprate, when you shine it with laser of a specific frequency, it exhibits transient superconductivity. So we should understand this.
But you still have previous version of Perry Nakai.
Yes, they are there.
Not really withdrawn.
So they have three versions. In the third version, they make this comment and they withdraw it. But according to archive principle, your old version has to be there. So it is there. Yeah, you had a.
When you make transients, you mean like for a short time it shows like infinite conductivity or something? Or
what? So what they do is they look at frequency. Suppose I take a normal superconductor and look at frequency dependent conductivity. There is a characteristic 1 over omega fall. And from that, you can infer from the height and various things about the superfluid density. So it's a well-known phenomenon in spectroscopy. So they see that kind of signatures for a short time scale.
Do they choose their laser at some resonance frequency or some optical format?
Exactly. Okay. So in both experiments, they resonantly excite copper oxygen mode. That will play a role in what I'm going to say also. So in fact, effect of radiation on superconductor is a very old subject. Ah, yeah, you have it.
Scale?
Correct. So these are all femtosecond lasers. So they shine the laser light over about 100 femtosecond, and then they watch what is going on over several picoseconds.
Okay.
And in the picoseconds, during that period, they probe it, and they can see a lot of beautiful transient dynamics. It's a very matured field where people study quasi-particle dynamics in various systems and lots of.
So the transient superconductivity persists for picoseconds.
Picoseconds, exactly. Not very long. Yeah.
I see.
So in this system, they again do the same experiment as I said, and they see this remarkable signature of transient superconductivity well above the TC at that particular doping in this particular range. And as I said, microwave induced.
So these are, I assume, tri-sapphire lasers?
Yes. Right, so it's 20 terahertz or 80 MeV. That's the energy range.
So what's the and so these are pulse, right?
Exactly. So the
What's the time scale between each pulse?
1 over terahertz. I don't know how many picoseconds. It's a femtosecond.
One.
Yeah.
So every picosecond there's a pulse?
No. The pulse. There are several cycles. About 100 cycles in about.
Okay, so 100 picosecond is a.
Exactly, yeah. So femtosecond laser.
Femtosecond,
yes.
And it's transient over picoseconds.
Exactly. So
if you keep shining on it, it stays superconductivity forever?
No. Then things get started heating up and so on. So you send a pulse.
How can you heat this superconductor?
You melt it, you melt the sample and so on. So
you pump it to the
pump. Pump, exactly. So in fact, there are very interesting issues. You want to supply energy. And then you don't want it to heat the sample. So there should be quasi-particle lattice scattering so that energy gets drained to the heat bath. And at the same time, you pump some energy to the electron system. So those kinds of complications are there, which they manage. And
so first a few pulses, maybe you can see this phenomenon. But later, maybe this one.
Correct.
Sample heat up and then things change.
That's right, exactly. So this is a very matured field when it comes to microwave radiation. The olden days, what they did was they had two superconductors connected by a narrow bridge called Anderson-Dehm bridge. So they shine microwave. You find increase in critical current, change in TC by some places by 50% and so on. And there are theories due to Eliasberg and others explaining that. So this is something very unusual compared to those numbers there. So there, maybe I should mention, the basic idea is that suppose I have a superconductor, then if I shine radiation like a microwave radiation, what the radiation can do is it can remove low energy thermal quasi-particles and take them, deplete them and take them into higher energy. That means you are changing the quasi-particle distribution function. So what Eliasberg suggested is that if you can change quasi-particle distribution function, let's see what happens by putting it in the BCS gap equation. And they found that the TC goes up, so self-consistently. So there are very beautiful theories associated with that. I will not go into those details. Now, this is Robert Dickey. I think when Zavgan was a student, when I was there, Bob was there at Princeton. He was beyond 80, but still very active. So he wrote a beautiful paper back in 1984. He was intrigued by several phenomena in nuclear magnetic resonance and electron spin resonance and so on. So in order to understand them, he said that, let me consider a collection of two-level atoms interacting with a single boson mode. You can imagine an electromagnetic cavity, and there is some Eigen mode. And then there are some two-level atoms which are nearly resonant with it. So for all these things to happen, the wavelength of boson mode is larger than the sample size or intra-atomic distances. And also, you ignore kinetic energy of atoms. So he wrote down a very simple model Hamiltonian. His point was that the phenomena characteristic of bosonic system, namely stimulated emissions and so on, should somehow work. And the simple collection of two-level atoms interacting with a single boson mode should go into some collective state, which he calls it as super radiance. So all this is modeled by a very
single boson mode, maybe occupied by many bosons.
Right. So you can. So there are a few initial conditions. One is what you are saying. That is, you start with a macroscopically occupied single boson mode and suddenly put atoms. See how they react. In another way is, the mode is empty. You start with all atoms in an excited state.
I see.
And then you see that the mode will be preferentially occupied. There will be
a
feedback.
So
in fact, the several initial conditions can be created, and you can do a lot of wonderful things. So this is Dickey Hamiltonian. Now we treat a two-level atom in terms of an Ising spin, or a Pauli spin matrix. So the ground state means spin is up, and the excited state spin is down. And then the fact that the two-level has an energy splitting h cross omega naught is given by this. I put it for convenience in resonance with the two-level, with the bosonic system. And then there is a coupling constant, which tells you that the spin can flip and then emit a boson or absorb a boson. And there are certain approximations made here called rotating wave approximations. When you start with P dot A Hamiltonian, you will have several terms, throw some of them. And this is the minimal model.
Is that the same as the Jaynes-Cummings model?
Yes. So historically, Jaynes-Cummings discovered it later. And they focused on few atoms coupled to electromagnetic mode.
But it's the same Hamiltonian.
Exactly, same Hamiltonian. Dick considered it a collection of them and looked for different. So once you have this model, you can already see some very nice conserved quantity. N star is the number of atoms that are excited. N is the number of bosons. So for example, if number of bosons is zero, if all atoms are excited, you can imagine half atoms emitting some bosons, and then the number is conserved simply because of this term. So this is the Hamiltonian that you want to study. So you can, since you have this spin representation, you can conveniently separate the space into in terms of total spins. So this is a maximal total spin state, and then the next states, and so on. And then you will now see that super radiance corresponds to a tendency to have maximal spin within a given sector in the following way. Now, suppose you have just two atoms alone. Then you can imagine forming a triplet and singlet state. And then you can use that Hamiltonian and find out if you start with the triplet, that is two atoms in an excited state, what will happen? What you will find is there are two transition channels. One is it can, intermediate state can be a singlet and then comes here. and another is, sorry, triplet, and then another is a singlet. And what you find is a remarkable interference that this state, if this is an intermediate state, an atom excited, another is in the ground state, the other way with a minus sign, that this will not radiate at all. So it's like a dark exciton, just from quantum interference. Whereas this state, which we'll call as a triplet state, this will happily radiate with twice the strength. So already at the level of two atoms, when you solve the problem, you see this is called Dickey effect. You see the phenomena of reinforcing each other through quantum interference. And this basically remains an effect. So now we can go to many atoms. So this is what Dickey described. So the physically, it's the following. Suppose I start with all atoms in an excited state. Then there is always a natural line width. So let's say one atom decays. Then it will emit a photon. Then now, since I consider identical atoms and they are bosonic in some character, when it is in a superposed state like what I said, that is one atom down, sum over all possible atoms, then there is immediately a stimulation. That is, this mode will invite other atoms to excite and then to de-excite and then receive a boson. So you can work it out. It's a solvable model, basically, by simple equations of motion. And what you will find is, if you think of these atoms as spins as in terms of polarization, there will be a net polarization in the xy plane. It will start rotating. There will be a giant polarization, which will start rotating. In the Bloch sphere, you move in the equator. So this is a famous super radiance. Now, if you look at the emission characteristic of this particular super radiant state, since atoms are acting in coherence, the emission rate will not be proportional to n, it will be proportional to n squared, because things constructively interfere. So this is called super radiance.
But when you have n atoms, whether atom would want to radiate via the state which have a maximum spin. For example, you start with n atom all pointing up.
Correct.
Then in the intermediate step, do they try to go through the state with a maximum spin, then go to a downspin state? So it looks like for the two atom state, that's what looks like that's what you have.
Correct.
They want to maintain the maximum spin when they decay in down.
Exactly.
But if that same thing is true for n atom states?
Precisely.
I see.
It is, in fact, that's what is, if you take this n atom state, basically all these blocks corresponds to various total spin. So the matrix elements basically connect you along this ladder only. There is no connection between this and this. So it is to do with the conservation factor that I was talking about also. So it preferentially goes along this line, and somewhere in between is a super radiant state. Now there is something called superfluorescence, which is often seen in experiments. You specifically consider any collection of, for example, a semiconductor with two-level states coming from impurities, and you can pump energy into it, and they can relax to some intermediate state, and there can be superfluorescence, which is seen experimentally. All these things are also connected with laser. But in laser, what you do is you use this kind of physics, and then you put a mirror, and then you select a mode, and then there is a positive feedback, and then you get out the radiation through a semi-transparent mirror. So there is a close connection between Dickey super radiance and lasers, and there are subtle differences, which I do not know, so I will not go into the details. So it has also connected to several phenomena seen in NMR, electron spin resonance, laser physics. Now, a lot of discussions about this in circuit quantum electrodynamics. There is electrodynamics involving Josephson junctions and then cold atom semiconductors. And also, as I said, super radiant system exhibits very rich dynamics, including chaos. So it's a very active field. Now we come to superconductivity. Now, the field of superconductivity is seeing lots of excitements since 1987, and many, many things are happening. And it's all due to this discovery due to Bednarz and Muller, who started with this simple lanthanum copper oxide. When they doped it with barium, they saw 32 Kelvin superconductivity. Now with mercury material, based material, with three-layer cuprate, you can go up to 163 Kelvin. So there's remarkable progress, a lot of activity. So once you, you know, become rich, you want to become richer. So you want to reach room temperature superconductivity, want to increase TCs and so on. Okay. So all these efforts by these experimental friends are to create high temperature superconductivity or some with some desired properties. So in order to understand what I'm going to say, let us start with very simple BCS theory. In BCS theory, you have a very nice starting point, namely free Fermi gas. And then due to exchange of lattice quanta, namely phonons, you have some attraction among electrons in momentum space in a small shell, h cross omega d, around the Fermi energy. So superconductivity is a very simple modification in a very small shell in a K space. Now this is summarized very nicely by the famous BCS Hamiltonian. What BCS did was they took a very simple Fermi liquid type of approach, assumed some free Fermi gas, a Fermi liquid, some parameters, and then say that there is pair scattering involving only zero total momentum, that is two electrons with net momentum zero, k minus k and up and down spin, get scattered into the same shell, which is denoted by this prime index with some coupling constant g, which is positive. So it's an attractive interaction. It's a beautiful model Hamiltonian, which works remarkably well for many simple elemental metals with some parameters fitting. And it also so happens that it's exactly solvable by things like a Hartree-Fock theory. People call it as Bogoliubov-Hartree-Fock theory. In the standard Hartree-Fock theory, you take two-body interaction, factorize into numbers, electron numbers, saying that this is self-consistent potential seen by an electron due to other field. But here, pairing activity is going on. So you factorize it in a way which is very unusual, which was BCS achievement, that you factorize it in a way that electron number is not conserved. So this is called BCS mean field Hamiltonian, which can be diagonalized very easily by a Bogoliubov transformation. And once you diagonalize it, you get a very simple free Fermi Hamiltonian with Bogoliubov positive particles connected to old electron fermion operators like this with dispersion. So what has essentially happened is the following. If I take non-interacting fermions, I will have a Fermi C, and then I have some Fermi momentum. Then I can add fermions above the Fermi C, so that will describe an electron branch. Or I can remove electron, so that will describe a whole branch. So this will be the excitation spectrum of a free Fermi gas or a Fermi liquid. Now this small attractive interaction on the Fermi surface has led to some new hybridization. And according to BCS theory, what has happened is these electrons and holes, which are at low energies close to the Fermi level, they hybridize. Electron and hole hybridize and produce you the famous superconducting gap. So this is BCS theory in a nutshell. So it's a very unusual thing because we know symmetry breaking phenomena in condensed matter physics, like charge density wave, spin density wave, where you hybridize typically electron and electron, or a hole and a hole. So here, you have an anomalous character, namely an electron and hole gets hybridized. So that means, in some sense, charges are conserved only modulo 2. So that is the famous superconductivity phenomenon. OK. Now, in order to understand the superradiance phenomena, we have to go to the this description. That is, the full Fock space of free Fermi gas. Normally, it's written as direct product over every momentum and every spin. But when it comes to superconductivity, it is convenient to write it in terms of direct product over so-called time reversal, time reversed single particle states. For example, if you take an electron with momentum k, wave vector k upspin, then there is a minus k downspin. So those two states are time reversal symmetry related. So look at occupancies in this state. And there are four possible states. If you don't want to do overcomplete it, these are all the four possible states. This pair of single particle states can be empty, or it can be doubly occupied like this, or it can have one fermion with upspin at k, or downspin with minus at minus k. Now, the other states that you were looking for will be there when you replace k by minus k. So everything is completed. So it's a complete description of our standard Fock space. Now, this description is very convenient because if you look at BCS interaction, at the end, what it does is it only cares about this and this state. So BCS So BCS interaction basically spontaneously adds a pair of electrons and removes an electron. So these two gets hybridized or these two gets mixed. So it is as if development of superconductivity amounts to this subspace getting a new eigenstate through hybridization of this, namely uk plus vk, a familiar form, and a very not very familiar form, uk minus vk. Normally, we talk about it when we write up BCS theory, but it turns out this is also a very important state, as we will see. Now, in this time-reversed single particle, time-reversal-related single particle state, this I will call it as a bosonic state because they have zero or two fermions. So this I will call as a fermionic state. So this fermionic state, unpaired fermion, carries a momentum k and minus k, whereas this carries zero momentum. So we will call it as Anderson atom because this will play the role that Dickey wants in the super radiance. In a very natural way, this will get coupled to external radiation. So this is what we'll call it as A atom. Now we can want to know how these states in the subspace get modified when quasi-particle operators act on this. So I'm sorry if I'm repeating a very well-known textbook thing, but for completeness. So if you take a BCS state and act on it with Bogoliubov quasi-particle annihilation operator, it will annihilate it. But this is important. It's there in BCS theory, but normally we don't take it seriously. If you act with this creation operator, momentum q up spin, what it does is it removes an A atom and then replaces that bosonic atom by one fermion. Similarly, if you do it minus q dagger, it removes an A atom and replaces it by an unpaired fermion. So this is the effect of Bogoliubov quasi-particles on this. But now what is normally emphasized is this one, that is there an operator which creates A atom excitation? The answer is yes. So if you take a pair of Bogoliubov quasi-particles in the same subspace, q up minus q down, that means a pair which carries zero total momentum, it's simple algebra, that what it will do is it will pick out that A atom at state q and then put it in an excited state. So that means the set of excitations that BCS wave function supports can be separated into fermionic excitations and bosonic excitations. In some sense, both are of equal number. In fact, there is a pseudo-spin formalism of BCS superconductivity due to Anderson, which I will pausing on mention. There he basically considers this subspace alone. He considers this subspace alone and calculates TC and various things, ignoring single fermion. So the end result is you will get a factor of 2 for TC. That is, TC will be half of the full TC. But in other words, these both type of states are important. In pseudo spin formalism, this is given too much of importance. What is interesting is when we study thermodynamics and in various response of superconductor, we have been focusing mostly on the fermionic states and not much on this particular state, which is what I'm going to do now. Now, another simple thing, that once you recognize that there are two levels, two level atoms, you can replace them by pseudo spin operators. In the present case, since these states are created by these alpha operators, they have very nice connection with these Pauli operators are related in this particular simple way, and it's an exact, formally exact thing. So I will come to this later. Now the BCS mean field Hamiltonian in the pair subspace, which according to Anderson's pseudo-spin formalism exhausts half of the necessary thing, is a very simple free spin Hamiltonian seeing an external magnetic field epsilon k. Now, in the pseudo-spin formalism, Anderson also uses a pseudo-spin. And the pseudo-spin that I'm using and that he is using are connected by a k-dependent rotation in a k-space. So I will not go into the detail. So you can see a dramatic difference. The famous pseudo-spin theory of Anderson looks like this. Before interaction, so this is k, the wave vector, and this is kf. So Anderson's pseudo spins are all pointing up below Fermi level. They are all pointing down above the Fermi level. Now, what after interaction, what happens is you develop what is called a block wall. So these spins slowly rotate, and in fact, they become perpendicular to this and then go down. And the width of the block wall measures the amount of interactions and so on. Now, the basis that I have chosen, I have rotated this block wall and made it into a ferromagnet. In fact, that turns out to be convenient for what I'm going to discuss. So this is the just rewriting whatever we know in terms of this pseudo-spin operator and focusing on pair subspace. Now, the next thing I'm going to do is to study interaction of electromagnetic and radiation, like photon and phonon with electrons. Now, fortunately, I'm in a very happy situation in which the wavelength of what I'm going to discuss is large compared to the sample size. So my interaction Hamiltonian has a very simple form. So basically, I choose some convenient bosonic mode. It could be a femtosecond laser that I'm shining, or a phonon mode that is excited. And since it carries zero momentum, there is no momentum transfer. You have essentially a number operator. But it's a very important so-called coherence factor. So now what we do is, you replace this electron operator in terms of Bogoliubov quasi-particles, and then make the relevant approximation. And what you find is a remarkable term. It says that the pair operator can get excited spontaneously by absorption of phonon or photon, and then vice versa. So when you rewrite it, you land back in Dickey-Hamiltonian. So I am focusing on zero momentum and the Bose sector, and that's already rich. It's as if you have a collection of two-level atoms, which is coupled to this boson, and then this is the full Hamiltonian. So here I have ignored the fermion excitation, which is a very valid thing at very low temperature when fermionic quasi-particles are not there. So this is a very good approximation. As I said, it is using this kind of thing Anderson recovers a full thermodynamics, except for a factor of half. So I am focusing on interaction with external radiation. So this is a key thing, that recognizing that BCS Hamiltonian, when it interacts with long wavelength, has a Dickey form. This simple thing has been missed in the literature.
So,
yes.
So the B and B dagger, they're related to the photon creation and annihilation operator?
Exactly, yes. Yeah, sorry, I did not go into the detail. So you start with P dot A Hamiltonian.
If I go back to the plane wave representation for the vector potential, right?
Yes.
This would have a real space vector nature, right?
So what will be there will be polarization,
right,
coming through A. And then finally, you can evaluate the matrix elements. Then it will have this form.
Well, yeah. So you're saying the matrix element of the polarization here, you've swamped it somehow in the capital BK?
Exactly. And also through this very important symmetry property. Because P dot A changes sign under momentum change. So you have this. This is something very, very important. In fact, this is important when, if you look at BCS theory, when they discuss NMR relaxation, BK will have some behavior. When you look at electrodynamic response, so that because the coherence factors will come in one case, it will cancel. In another case, it will not cancel. So now, let's see what is actually going on. And suppose now I shine radiation through this B field, what exactly will happen? So now it is important to go to our thank you. So let us go to K space. originally I had a Fermi C. Then after interaction, the Fermi C is smeared. So the minimum of quasi-particle gap that I showed in one of the pictures above, delta, lies in this region. So suppose I shine laser with frequency less than delta, then at very low temperature, there won't be much effect because there are no thermal quasi-particles, so it will just simply pass through. Then as I approach the bottom of this quasi-particle gap, this region will start getting disturbed because it is this region which is nearly resonant with the radiation. So in terms of this A atom, these A atoms live here in K space because I associated A atom with a K and minus K up and up down. Similarly, minus K, K up down. So K atom lives in K space. So it is as if, as I tune the frequency close to resonance, this atom gets disturbed and they start participating in this superradiance activity. Because superradiance also is not that's you know taken for granted. If you are in resonance, there will be always superradiance. If you are off resonance, you need some critical strength in order to have superradiance. So here, you are not on resonance, so you are slowly increasing the frequency. So when you go close to the resonance, depending on the coupling constant, as far as this Hamiltonian is concerned, there will be superradiance activity. So essentially what happens is, I am pumping radiation, and the two-level atoms which are happy in the ground state, some of them get excited, and they radiate back, and then there is stimulated emission, and then they go through the Dickey cycle exactly happened before, according to this Hamiltonian.
Your late pupils describe this process as a particle creation. You create, I don't know, you create a single pair of particle hole.
Right.
And so here you say there's some kind of another channel. Looks like that same channel. This is a different channel.
Yes. In fact,
have same energy or different energy.
Yeah. That is where this coherence. So what Zhougang is saying is that if I have any perturbation, normally it's assuming I have a translation invariant system. It will have some form like this.
Yeah.
Some matrix element kick. Okay. So, for example, when you do optics with ordinary crystal or with metal, this is what you do. You create particle hole pair excitations. Now, in a superconductor, when you are close to the Fermi level, this is lost. In the sense, when you go back to Bogoliubov quasi particles, what happens is you have things like this. Times these coherence factors. So what we think in terms of electron hole pair creation, in terms of Bogoliubov quasi particles, start looking like pair creation. Now, if I look at a general Bogoliubov pair with momentum q, it will correspond to removing two A atoms and then putting two fermions. Whereas in the present case, because I'm looking at q equal to 0, it is doing something special. In fact, I will explain what is finally happening.
So q equals 0 is very special.
Very special.
But is this energy threshold is a delta or two delta?
Two delta. It's a two delta.
So that's the same as creating particle pair.
Exactly.
Also same threshold.
So that's right. It's a very important point. Normally, when you have particle hole continuum like this, now in a superconductor, the low energy region gets messed up. Then what we have is we have some excitation concentrated here, which is what we are focusing on. The total momentum zero is the energy of this particle hole pair excitation. They look like pair excitation. So all the spectral weight is focused. I'm focusing on this. Okay. Now, this model, this Hamiltonian, is even exactly solvable for some choice of lambda. For example, if lambda is independent of k, then Bethe-Ansart solution exists for this. Now the physics is very simple in terms of the Bethe-Ansart solution. What happens is, you can say that what is going on is a hybridization of the boson mode with pseudo spins. So essentially, if you look at this boson operator, which is an external boson mode, is getting hybridized with some collective spin flip operator in k space. So there is omega k. For example, if you take the super radiant state, this omega k is positive, and it is peaked around the region wherever resonance condition is nearly satisfied. So what you are doing is you are hybridizing a photon with some disturbance in k space in terms of pseudospin. So in other words, you are creating a wave packet in pseudospin space and then hybridizing that wave packet with B. And then you are macroscopically occupying. Because you started with B dagger to the power of n, which is like a macroscopically occupied boson mode. Then due to this interaction, a simple hybridization takes place. And then in some sense, there is a coherence developing between boson and some disturbance to the condensate. This is something important now. Now, we can ask what is actually physically going on. Now, I do not want to go into the mathematics of it. You can very easily show what this does is it basically disturbs the Cooper pair wave function shape. Because at the end of the day, we have to come back to real space. And then what you have is the BCS state is basically a collection of Cooper pairs, which is in some antisymmetrized state. So even though I use, for technical purposes, this number non-conserving state, finally, if I have a small grain of superconductor, this is what is actually going on. Now, I can show that the disturbance that we are causing due to this radiation to this superconducting system is, as far as momentum is concerned, zero momentum. So the only thing I can disturb is relative momentum as of Cooper pair. So what I'm doing is I am creating shape oscillations in Cooper pair. So a Cooper pair function, for example, phi of rho, as you know in the standard BCS theory, there will be an envelope function which decays exponentially, and then inside there will be oscillation, reflecting the fact there is an underlying Fermi C. So by selectively disturbing the A atoms in K space, I am creating some deformation of the Cooper pair wave function shape. So this is the deformation I am doing. So I am hybridizing those deformation, because this is something very important. Phonon or photon is neutral. So I cannot play with the phase of the Cooper pair wave function. So what all I can do is I can do something to the internal part of the Cooper pair, namely the shape of the wave function. So in the language of entanglement, what you are doing is you are entangling a mode, which is a neutral mode, it could be a photon or a phonon, with a mode you create by hand, namely some deformation of the Cooper pair. So it's a neutral mode. Now we will see soon how it helps actually in establishing superconductivity in the normal state. So this is the basic thing in what I'm doing. So in all the considerations that in the earlier work, people have focused on this unpaired fermions, depletion of them and increase in superconducting pairing. But now here I'm focusing on the zero mode. You can say that each A atom represents, in some sense, a zero momentum mode, but with some finite energy. And I'm touching them. So these are all. Now let me come to the experiments. So experimentally, as I said, what happens? You have a lanthanum copper oxide material, and then you have photon, and then there is a mode, which is a phonon mode. Now there is a strong hybridization between the two. This is called a polariton Hamilton. In fact, we learned it in solid state physics that if you shine light in some of these ionic crystals, what you have is you have a steeply dispersing photon branch, velocity of light, and there is some optic mode. What will happen is the two will hybridize, and then you will have so-called polariton. And we are focusing on this. So we are at resonance, we are at a long wavelength, and we are hybridizing these two. So what will happen is when you do this, there will be like a Rabi oscillation. If you pump in energy in one of the mode, it will go to the other mode and come back, or you can describe in terms of quantum entanglement. Now, what is interesting is, how is it making such a big difference to the cuprate crystal? This is where this observation that I have made comes. So low energy physics of superconductivity in cuprate is often described in terms of a very simple tight binding model. Now what this mode, this copper oxygen stretching mode is doing is, it is actually touching the basic parameter in the problem, namely Hopping matrix ring. Suppose I have an octahedra, and I have an oxygen atom and then, copper atom and apical oxygen. If I stretch this, it will lead to some displacement in this direction, and then the overlap matrix element between two copper changes. Similarly, if I stretch in this direction, it changes. So typically, this is denoted in terms of electron phonon coupling constant, that is, this is an equilibrium Hopping matrix element which changes due to lattice displacement. Typically, it's proportional to u, and then you have this parameter. So what, unlike earlier experiments in microwave-induced superconductivity change, here it is touching the band parameters. So it is hopping, changing the T of the TJ model, and then you could look at the consequences, which is what I will do. Now, what I will do next is not going to solve a simple, solve a complicated model like TJ model. I will give a qualitative discussion to explain enhancement. Okay. So this is what is happening. As I said, you are touching the octahedra and then changing their shape, or you are distorting them. So that changes the band parameter. So something is going on. So how do I really explain it? This is where pseudo gap. It's a very, very one of the hard problems in cuprate superconductor, that if you look at the superconducting dome, there is a regime where things are extremely messy due to some intrinsic physics plus extrinsic physics. So one thing that is very clear is that it is not behaving like a Fermi liquid, in the sense you expect, if you have a Fermi surface like in cuprate, if you have a Fermi surface like this, you expect spin activity from all over from the Fermi surface. But what you find is that you find spin activity essentially from some portions of the Fermi surface. So spins are, in some sense, frozen into singlets. So that's why it's called spin pseudo gap or pseudo gap phase. Now, there are several experiments which tell you that if you do, if you look carefully in this region, it looks like a superconductor. In the sense, there is local order parameter, but however, phase is strongly fluctuating. Now, we know it's a two-dimensional system. So phase fluctuations can appear in two ways. One is simple Gaussian fluctuation. Another is vertex fluctuations, that is, creation of vertex-anti-vertex pair. There are famous Nernst effect experiment and other Raman experiments which indicate that you see thermal vertex-anti-vertex pair over a very wide temperature range. This is true in IPCO and in LSU and various materials. So a way to view the normal state of cuprate is as a superconductor which is disordered by its own thermal vertices. There are positive and negative vertices which are randomly moving around like in a liquid. So that's a very good picture over a range of temperature in the underdoped region of cuprate. Now I'm going to use that picture, which is very phenomenological, and translate it into the language that I did before in the next 5 minutes. Okay. So this is what I already explained. Now this is a very important part of what I'm saying. If you stick to BCS description, something remarkable happens in the standard BCS theory. If you move above TC, essentially pairing disappears. So if you look at the pair subspace, contains vanishingly small A atoms close to the Fermi surface. Because the UK and VK go back to their old non-superconducting values, in a small region, you have essentially unpaired fermions close to the Fermi surface. And there is no pairing activity at all. Whereas in the case of pseudo gap phase of cuprate, what you find is the opposite. You have a lot of pairing, a vanishingly small density of unpaired fermions, as you see from many magnetic signals. So that means, in the language of these A atoms, it has predominantly A atoms in grounded excited states. Now, what is the meaning of A atoms in a costless soundless wave? This is something very important. So now, the attitude I have taken in solving this problem is to give this model Hamiltonian. Now, having realized the fact that I have very few fermionic excitations at low energies, I will write down a bosonic model for the normal state. Now, what are these bosons? These bosons are not plane wave states. So what I do is I take a snapshot of the causal Lissauer's vertices with some random configuration. And that dynamics is very slow compared to the dynamics that I'm looking at in terms of terahertz radiation. So I can formally solve Bogoliubov-Dijon equation in that background. Then what I will find is, because the state is overall time reversal symmetric, some time reversal symmetry related states. So I can go back and work out exactly like what BCS theory did in this basis, and then you essentially get back a Dickey-like model wherein instead of K space, you have M space. Now this Bogoliubov operators excites an M matter. So this is a model Hamiltonian that I have introduced to describe this aspect of superconductivity. For example, if you want to study NMR, this is not sufficient because it gives away spin degrees of freedom, but it captures the essence of the, or it tries to put the presence of superconducting correlations within a BCS formalism as closely as possible. Now, things are again, I will be qualitative. Now I suggest a feedback mechanism and qualitative argument. So let me sit about TC. So as I said, there are A atoms as before, but a small density of excited A atoms are in resonance with the boson mode. Now something very remarkable happens. Suppose I have an excited A atom, and if it is close to resonance, then with the mode that I have sent, which is macroscopically occupied, it will stimulate emission of that excited state. So these A atoms will be stimulated to emit a boson and to go to its ground state. So what it means is increase in A atom ground state, that's the meaning of this stimulation. Now, if you go back to BCS formalism, the more density of A atoms I have, there is more superconducting correlation. So which means now, I have enhanced superconducting correlation. Then if I go back to this UK, VK, and the Dickey interaction factor, that also increases. So that means enhanced superradiant. So there is a feedback. So within this picture, which this is something I have not worked out quantitatively. I'm trying, I have not succeeded. There is some self-consistency, which tells you that, of course, in whatever I say, I have to go beyond this model Hamiltonian. By the way, I should mention that this is a model Hamiltonian in which I have ignored a very important feedback factor, because this is a mean field Hamiltonian, which says that if I flip a spin, pseudo spin, nothing will happen. But that is not true. There will be a local adjustment of the mean field. Now, the way I have argued, the local adjustment is in favor of superconductivity. I will not go into the details of that. So this is the very briefly the feedback mechanism. Now, if you think about the Kostelitzalov superconductor, it's something very, very beautiful. In a Kostelitzalov superconductor, what we need to create superconductivity is to bind thermal vertices into vertex-anti-vertex pair. In other words, if I go to a Kostelitzalov superconductor, there are vertices which are essentially free. They are not correlated. So if I bring them together, if I pair them, to the extent I pair, I will see power law superconductivity. That's what we learn in superconductor, Kostelitzalov superconductor. So that means what all I need to do by this superradiance phenomena is two possibilities. One is to bind thermal vertices into vertex anti-vertex pair or create a periodic array. That is, suppose I spontaneously arrange them into some hexagonal lattice of vertex and anti-vertex, that also will increase long range order. What is interesting is, as through the feedback mechanism, there is an increase in pairing due to superradiance. It means increase in vertex core energy. Now, the key factor in Kostelitzalov's theory is core energy. If you increase core energy, the TC will go up. So basically, this means tendency for pair binding and hence possibility of transient superconductivity. So I have been very sloppy and qualitative. But the point is, the massaging of Cooper pair wave function through this external boson mode makes, you know, the Cooper pairing enhanced, and there is lots of interesting possibility. I think this is what I have to say for this qualitative thing. Let me see if I have anything else to say. Probably not. Thank you very much.
Questions?
a situation where this A atom actually have a lower energy than two tail atom. So kind of like an exit time. So that's making this A atom more rigid, you know, it's probably they do play some role.
Yes.
And I wonder whether, you know, maybe at the according to mean field theory, the A atom have the same energy as a single pair breaking.
Yes.
But whether in the many body
yes.
sense.
In fact, you are right.
Whether there's a situation where
they are
atom, this can have lower energy. Than,
exactly. So they are called
particle coexistence.
So if we go back to the collective mode analysis of Anderson, who did these things at the beginning, there are three things. One is Goldstone mode,
yeah.
which gets gapped. That's a plasma, Anderson Higgs. And another is amplitude mode,
okay.
which is cluttered. Then there are, in principle, depending on the form of the interaction function, Vk, k prime,
okay.
in the BCS theory, you can have Cooper pair excitations, like what you are imagining.
I see.
So if I have some of them in resonance with it, so it can also amplify. So those they're all missed in simple mean field picture.
Okay.
So following Anderson's work, later others have studied exciton type. Here it will be a Cooper pair excitation.
Okay.
And for some model parameters, you do have such situations. But I do not know if they have seen such exciton effect in real superconductors.
I see.
But at the level of theory, they do exist. That's below 2 delta.
Exactly. Because if A atom have energy less than 2 delta, then your model will be much more reasonable in the sense of
exactly. It's off
below this energy. The only thing I have is AI.
So there are no continuum.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, I worried about it. But as far as I can see, this luxury doesn't exist. There is at least people have not seen this Cooper pair excited state.
I see.
There is a claim that people have seen the amplitude mode, which is close to 2 delta.
Okay.
Some work by Peter Littlewood and Chandra Verma. Long back, and there are other work.
I
see. And also, for the case of cuprate, things are a little more complicated because you have a D wave, so you have density
yeah.
of states everywhere.
Yeah.
So this kind of thing will be less favorable, but still, experiment seems to be indicating that something like this is going on.
So when you were writing this modulation of the Hopping parameter, I guess this is a more microscopic perspective
mm-hmm.
of what you're doing. So what happens then if you go into the half filled case in the anti-fermionic insulator? Is there some interesting observations that can be made there in terms of, anti-fermionic resonance or anything like that? Because then if you're modulating some phonons.
So from pseudo spin, you go to real spin.
I'm just wondering, is there some constraint one can put in terms of the microscopic channels by which the photon couples microscopically with the
some exchange process.
Yeah,
it's a very good point. I have not thought about it seriously. I wondered what will happen.
Experimentally, they have not done it?
No, they have. This is a very recent experiment. So this.
Like I'm just thinking 214. Repeat the experiments on 214.
Exactly.
What happens?
What you are saying is go to the Mott insulator and see how this copper oxygen vibration drives what happens to the spin liquid or what happens to the antiferromagnet. I think it's a very good suggestion.
They haven't done that.
There is no experiment. In fact, this class of experiments is very new by Cavalieri in the last 3 years. They first focused on manganites. Now they have moved to cuprates. So I do not know of any experiments where they go to the Mott insulator. So the manganites, they are mostly in the charge ordered state or in the metallic state. So it's a completely open field and there are many beautiful possibilities. I should also point out, all these things can be applied to liquid helium-3, where perhaps things can be even neater. Because there what I will have to do is I will have to create some collective density excitations of this super fluid helium-3 and there is a possibility. And then cold atoms, you know. There's a lot of room for checking some of these ideas there. Yes?
The Hamiltonian you wrote, the second quantum Hamiltonian for the normal state,
I'm
confused how it relates to the A atom.
Okay, so this is the A atom. So please remember, in the case of BCS, you had alpha, sorry, M, there should be M here. That will be alpha K dagger alpha K. So you have Bogoliubov quasi particles in momentum space. Here, Bogoliubov quasi particles, some of them live around the vertex core, for example, and some of them are extended, they are not plane wave. So a general notation for them is M. It's a very, so some of them will be localized, some of them will be extended. Then you look at occupancies of those subspace. Again, you have four states, 0, 2, and then two unpaired fermions. And then you have these Pauli spin operators. So it's analogous to superconducting state of BCS Hamiltonian, but now specialized to the pseudo gap, where there is no off-diagonal long-range order because these A atoms are localized in space.
More questions?
I'm sorry, it was a very heuristic thing at the end. But
let's thank Bhaskaran again. Yeah.